Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Elections in the time of coronavirus, tonight on Behind the Headlines. Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us as we continue to do the show remotely. I'm pleased to be joined today by Linda Phillips, Elections Administrator for the Shelby County Election Commission. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Along with Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. And let me say up front, because of some scheduling issues, we are pre-taping this. So this was taped a week ago from when it airs, which is a little bit awkward timing-wise. With early voting ending a few days from when this will air. But we'll try to remind people of that as we go through. But a big picture question is simply, how do you and your staff and your volunteers keep people safe and secure and feeling comfortable voting during this time when we need to be distanced and socially distant?
Well, we've taken tremendous precautions at our early voting and our Election Day polling places to make sure voters are safe. We changed five early voting locations because they were too small to allow for social distancing. We have gotten an enormous amount of personal protective equipment. Our poll workers have masks, face shields, gloves, hand sanitizer by the gallon. Voters will get a pen that if they don't bring their own, it's theirs to take home, so we don't have to sanitize pens. There'll be a disposable stylus so the voter doesn't need to touch the voting machine. And if they want a sticker, they'll peel it off themselves.
Yeah. And just to orient people, and I, maybe this is just me, I get confused by the number of elections, and every year I kind of register my confusion on the show. But we are right now in the county general election and the state federal primary, with the actual voting day for that being August 6th. And as I mentioned, early voting ending on August 1st. Did I get that first part right,
Linda? Yes, that's right.
Amazing. And then we go into the election, the general election, which obviously, you know, at a presidential level has a huge focus on it this year. We go into that in the fall. Before I turn it over to Bill, mail-in voting, the deadline as this show airs, the deadline to get a mail-in absentee vote is passed. But as we look ahead to the general election, to the federal election, I should say, assuming nothing changes in the courts and so on, what do people do to have to get an absentee ballot for the upcoming November election?
Well, they'll need to file an application. The first day an application can be accepted is 90 days prior to the election. And they can get the application. It'll be posted on our website on the first day that it can be sent in. They need to fill that out. They need to send it to us. And then approximately 30 days before the election, ballots will start going out. There seems to be this myth that our ballots will be ready much before that. If they apply on August the 5th, obviously we don't know who won the primary yet. So the municipal candidates have until August the 20th to qualify, until August the 27th to withdraw. So the earliest possible date we could have ballots would be somewhere around September 20th.
Okay, let me go to Bill.
So the pandemic precautions that you talked about at the early voting sites, you get to do that all again, but it's multiplied by the different precincts because, of course, on election day, you don't vote at the nearest location or an early voting site. You vote at the precinct that you are assigned to by your address. So the precautions get multiplied several times over, don't they?
Yes, that's true. You should see the mountain of hand sanitizer we have in our warehouse, and we have plexiglass shields, and there's just so much stuff in the warehouse right now. It's really hard to move around in it.
Mm-hmm. And in preparing for that general election, You don't have a whole lot of time between the early voting period and election day, just a few days, and then you hit the road with that as well. So your schedule is very compressed in all of this. You move from that, and of course, you're always thinking ahead on this too. So there's the election day, and then there's election night when you start to count the votes as well.
That's right. So it's going to be an interesting year.
Mm-hmm. This election cycle, it is kind of the calm before the storm, though, because everybody wants to vote in the November presidential election. That's your most popular voting cycle here, and I would imagine in other places as well.
Yeah, I would expect record turnout for the November 2020 election. We've seen a lot of interest in it already. So it's, I know we anticipate a huge increase in absentee ballots, so we're staffing up for that.
Mm-hmm. And there have been questions about a new voting system. We're using the same voting system that we have been using for a number of years now, but you've also had an upgrade in some of your technology that will come in handy for actually scanning the ballots, the absentee ballots, as well as any provisional ballots, correct?
That's right, yes. The new system, voters will not see the new equipment in November. We've reached the reluctant decision that it's simply not possible to, in this time of pandemic, get everybody on the staff familiar with it, get everyone trained. It's just going to have to wait. However, we are using the new components for the scanning of the mail-in ballots. Our old technology was based on technology that debuted in 1954 and was, well, let's say in the 4 years that I've been here, not all of our scanners have ever worked consistently. At least two have broken down in every election cycle. So we have four new high-speed scanners that will allow us to scan ballots much more quickly.
Before I send this back to Eric, let's talk for a second about the process of getting the absentee or the mail-in ballots, as we've referred to them, of getting those to voters for the August elections. A lot of people started complaining or saying, hey, I sent in my request for a ballot pretty early in the process, and I didn't get it. I got some kind of notice about it, but then didn't get it for quite a while afterwards. What was going on with that delay?
Well, we paused production of the ballots because Governor Lee had appointed a judge that would have been, had things fallen in place, would have required us to have the retention race on the August ballot. So we halted the production of the ballots because from an election administrator standpoint, having ballots out there that are wrong is an epic nightmare. Epic. You want to have a horrible election, try that. So we, on the coordinator's recommendation, halted production of the ballots. And then, unfortunately, the printer of the ballots, when we did release them, made a mistake that delayed it by a week. So, however, we are caught up as of this taping, and everything that's come in as of the date of this taping will go out within 48 hours.
Right. And Eric, to your point about being surprised, the retention race is one of the surprises on the ballot. There is a judicial retention race on the ballot where you will vote to retain or to replace.
And let me stay with you, actually, Bill, for a second. There, and maybe give us a little background on the ruling by the chancellor in Nashville and how that, what that has meant, and how that has, there was some challenges to this notion that, quote, anyone, and I know it's not that, but anyone could get an absentee ballot there. And, the chancellor in Nashville, who's a state chancellor, not a Nashville judge, ruled that, no, people need to be able to vote in this time of pandemic. Is that a simple encapsulation of that ruling?
Sort of. It's very rare that I've heard anybody call anything about the ruling simple, but when you applied for an absentee ballot, you have to apply for it. The election commission has to check this out and make sure you are actually a voter and all of that stuff. But the judge said there will be another question on the application, and it will basically ask you, do you feel comfortable with the pandemic? Do you have concerns about the pandemic that would make you want to avoid going out and voting at a polling place? And if you check that box, that is another reason that you can cite in order to get an absentee ballot. Linda, did I do that right?
You've got it. Yes.
And then to ask Linda about this, there was a further complication to it, because the question then became, okay, if you are a first-time voter, if you've just registered to vote in Tennessee, the rules have been that you have to vote in person. You cannot vote absentee the first time that you vote. And the judge, so far as we are recording this program, has said that that remains in place. Correct, Linda?
Yes, that's correct. Although I did want to correct it. If you're registered in person, say at the Department of Safety, or you came into our office and registered in person, you are entitled to vote absentee the first time, because there's been a face-to-face interaction with the voter. If you registered online or by mail, then you have to vote in person the first time.
Okay, and those are tips for the November election, since we are now past the August period to register to vote.
Right.
And this is part of a national conversation about in-person voting versus mail voting. I mean, you have states like, I think at Oregon is only mail voting. I think, you know, you don't vote in person in Washington, in Oregon. I think Washington State may have gone that same direction. But about the ruling from Nashville, let me say, I mean, there's been some dissent and disagreement with it. I'll read State Senator Brian Kelsey, who is also a lawyer. He filed suit against the chancellor's ruling, contending that the chancellor abused her discretion by rejecting the state's compelling interest in stopping voter fraud. He also argued there's been, you know, this abuse of power, effectively, you know, that the state legislature should set our laws, not the courts. Linda, from your point of view, I mean, they've challenged that ruling, I guess, between now and the beginning of early voting or the beginning of absentee voting for the general election, the rules could change again. Right? I mean, is that what you're planning for?
Yeah. One of the things, if you're in elections, you have to be really flexible and have a plan A, B, C, and then keep moving on down the alphabet.
Yeah. But from your point of view, one of some critics of mail-in voting, you know, President Trump being probably the most vocal and certainly the most prominent, that it is rife for fraud. Are you confident that the mail-in voting process that you just went through, and that is, let's say the rules don't change between now and the general election period, is this a process that is prone to or rife for fraud?
Well, I think the distinction is, and this isn't clear to anybody unless you're really an elections geek, voting by mail, as in Oregon and Washington, their voter is automatically mailed a ballot. There's no request process. There is more opportunity for fraud in that kind of a system. In what we have, which is absentee voting, where a voter has to apply for a ballot and we have the opportunity to check their signature and to, you know, make sure that they are who they say they are, then there's not as much opportunity for fraud. But I am sure that there will be some cases where, you know, people fill out ballots for their elderly parents, which, you know, is technically fraud, but we can't really detect it if the voter signs and their signatures match.
And in a normal election cycle, a normal election, if there is such a thing, in Shelby County, how much fraud do you all determine? But whether it's mail-in of any sort, somebody who's done a false ID, any fraud whatsoever, what is the frequency of that happening?
We usually just have a handful of cases. In absentee by mail voting, we tend to head off the fraud at the front end. We see a lot of moms signing for their college-age children and that sort of thing. But those signatures don't match, and we send them back, and we won't accept them unless the voter actually signs it. But actual, you know, fraud in ballots, we don't detect a lot. We do have some non-citizens that vote. We have on occasion had brothers who were had, you know, weren't eligible voters vote for their sibling, you know, but we turn all of that over to the district attorney general.
And when you say handful, is that 10 or is that 1,000?
It depends on, oh, it's less than 100, 10 elections. It just depends a lot on the number of people voting.
And again, to walk through it, again, because there's such a political spotlight on this right now, and elections are important. There's not, I'm not criticizing that, but if I want to vote absentee, as the rules stand right now, based on the court ruling out of Nashville, if I want to plan to vote by absentee, and I've never done it before, but I've voted, you know, many years here that I've lived in Shelby County. I do what to absentee vote in the general election in November?
Well, you need, it's a two-step process. First, you have to send us an application and we have to accept it. And then we will mail you a ballot and you have to fill it out correctly. You have to sign the affidavit, put the ballot in the affidavit envelope and seal it and then return it to us. It must be mailed. You cannot drop it off at your polling place on election day or drop it off at our office. It has to be mailed. And once you have asked to vote via absentee, the only way you can vote in person is by provisional ballot, which is a somewhat lengthy and complicated process. So, you know, I think personally, if you absolutely positively want to be sure that your vote is going to count, put on a mask and come vote in person. Because the other thing that is, you know, the unknown here is the Postal Service. I mean, the people we deal with are dedicated and passionate, but when you handle as much mail as they handle, it's inevitable that some of it's going to be misdirected. The voter won't get it, we won't get it, or we'll get it late.
And it is not based on postmark. That was something I learned in preparing for this. I would have assumed that, you know, kind of like your taxes, as long as they, when you fill out your taxes and you get it to the mail by midnight on, you know, whatever the tax day is and it's postmarked, you're good to go. That is not the case with a mail-in ballot.
That is true. Under the current law, they have to be received by 7 p.m. on election day through the mail. And if you wait until the last day, July 30th in October to request one, the odds are overwhelming that you will not get that ballot in time for you to mail it back without you, the voter, using some sort of express service.
Quick question before I go back to Bill. Again, people can go, I assume, to shelbyvote.com is the website when that form is ready, which you said earlier, it's not ready. If people are not internet savvy, they don't want it that way, do they call the election commission and they have it mailed to them?
Yeah, we have packets ready. We'll be mailing them out. They just need to call us. We would really appreciate it if you want a packet for November. Wait until after the August election, please. because our phone lines are really, really, really busy right now.
And that phone number, again, because there's going to be somebody out there who's going to email me if we don't have it. What is that phone number after the August election?
222-6800.
Okay, let me go back to Bill.
All right. In looking at the early voting numbers, it's been hard to compare this election to the 2016 election mainly because in the 2016 elections in this cycle, all of the early voting sites didn't open on opening day. This time around, you had 26 sites that all opened on opening day and went to the end of the early voting period on August 1st. What are your thoughts about the times we're in and what that means for voter turnout in general?
Well, it's really hard to tell at this point. I mean, when you compare to 2016, more people have voted in person at this point. But I don't know, you know, I don't know what that kind of trend is. I can tell you that it's a quick and easy process. Only one of our sites consistently has any lines. Otherwise, it was an in and out for voters.
Mm-hmm. The Secretary of State for Tennessee, Trey Hargett, was testifying before a Senate committee this week. He testified remotely from Nashville online. And the committee was having some discussion about the idea of absentee voting, mail-in voting, beyond absentee voting with election officials from several different states on this. Are we in a time of change where we're kind of examining the methods of voting and what works and what doesn't?
Well, I think we are, absolutely. You know, there's many things about Tennessee law that prohibit us from perhaps doing best practices. I would like to use a service in intelligent mail barcodes so that a voter can see exactly where their ballot is in the mail stream, both from us going to them and from them coming back to us. But unfortunately, that's not an option under Tennessee law, because Tennessee law prohibits the release of any absentee data to anyone until after the end of the early voting period. So I can't, you know, I can't use this service, which, you know, I think would be a huge improvement for voters. But, you know, the other thing is, if we're going to move more towards mail-in voting, I think we really need to do a pretty serious concentrated effort about cleaning up the voter rolls. We're mailing out polling place change letters, and typically 20 to 25% of those come back as undeliverable. So I want you to imagine the potential for fraud if we move to mail-in voting with the voter registration rolls that we have right now. 20 to 25% of those ballots aren't going to connect with a person. And, you know, that is an opportunity for serious vote fraud.
Mm-hmm. And there's been much discussion about voter fraud that centers on the kind of machines you use, whether you use machines or go to paper ballots as well. Some critics contend that it's best to go to hand-marked paper ballots. You have an opposite view on that, right?
I do, because we don't live in a world where everybody can hand-mark a paper ballot. Voters with disabilities, you know, they need the help, the technology. But the other thing is that technology keeps voters from making mistakes. You know, we see this all the time in hand-marked paper ballots. You know, as the absentees are coming back, people are just putting their ballots in the envelope. They're not including the affidavit. I can't count those. And, you know, that's just one of the real problems, is that voters aren't perfect and machines help keep them from making mistakes. So more votes count.
Mm-hmm. Eric? What does it take? You mentioned the voter rolls. I'm curious, what does it take to clean up the voter rolls?
Well, generally it's a process that takes several years. Washington says they have really high turnout, and that's true because they have really clean rolls, because politicians don't want you to mail ballots to addresses that don't exist. So if you were going to convert to that sort of a system, I think you'd have to send a series of notices over, you know, a year or so, and find out what voters aren't there, and, you know, then have a process to not mail them ballots. If you were going to go all vote by mail, you'd really have to make a tremendous investment in technology, you know, machines to prep ballots, because I think most of us in the election industry are not really comfortable outsourcing the preparation of our ballots. It's something we want to have control over.
Where does most of your funding come from? Is it all local, or is there some from the state, some from the federal government?
Oh, well, in the time of pandemic, generally all of our funding is local. But as a result of the pandemic, we've received federal pass-through funds from the state, and there is some funding coming from the state on the new voting equipment.
The notion, again, with so many absentee ballots in this current election, again, we've talked about, we're taping this a week ago, so the timing is a little off, but in a likelihood, let's say, again, the rules don't change, the likelihood of quite a few mail-in absentee ballots in November, how long will it take to process? I mean, will it take days? Will it take a week? I mean, how long does it take to process mail-in votes, given not just the counting and the scanning, but all the considerations you're talking about of, you know, missing affidavits or unclear markings and so on? What goes into that?
Well, we have a contingency plan. We can probably process about 120,000 ballots on election day. If we get much more than that, it will push over into another day. if we have, you know, if the same ratio holds for November as absentee requests over normal held for August, we'll have probably 160,000 ballots. At that time, our contingency plans, obviously, we're going to move to a larger space because I can't get enough people and tables even though the warehouse would be empty at that point, there's just not enough floor space to socially distance. So it's been discussed that we might take over the Agri Center, their conference area, or perhaps FedEx Forum, and, you know, just have an army of people counting them. But I think what most people don't really realize about absentee ballots is before you can start scanning them, there's an enormous amount of prep work. You know, a team has to count them and fill out the correct paperwork per box, and then they have to remove the affidavits. Then only then can the ballots be opened. So it's going to take some time, and people are just going to need to be patient.
I in-person voted, as I generally do in this early voting period. Back to some of the questions Bill had, when I hit that touchscreen thing and it registers my card and it makes all that noise, is there a paper trail to that, or is it really just stored in that machine?
It's really just stored in that machine, although there is three. It's restored redundantly, so if one failed, we have plenty of other ways to get your vote.
Is it saved on that little card?
No, that little card doesn't do anything except turn the machine on and say, okay, bring up this ballot.
Okay, well, that is, you've solved a mystery for me that I've always wondered. But that is all the time we have this week. Thank you for joining us, and thank you all for joining us. Join us again next week. If you missed any part of this episode, you can get this episode and past episodes on WKNO.org or a full podcast of the show on the Daily Memphian site, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks and good night.